Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Nearly half of Americans say they find groceries, utility bills, healthcare, housing, and transportation difficult to afford, according to a new poll from Politico. As a result, 27% of those surveyed said they skipped a medical checkup, and 23% said they skipped a dose of a prescription medication because of high costs. Almost 70% of middle-income Americans say their income is falling behind the cost of living, according to Primerica. Here in California, one in three households do not earn enough to meet their basic needs, according to the United Way of California. To make matters worse, healthcare costs are expected to skyrocket after Republicans refused to extend Affordable Care Act subsidies. Here is CBS Evening News correspondent Lana Zak asking cancer survivor Lori Hunt what will happen if the subsidies are not extended.
I couldn't afford it. I'd have to cancel my insurance. Just the assurance of good thoughts and prayers. That's pretty much it. That's all I would have.
Hunt survived breast cancer 3 years ago and was laid off earlier this year. Without the federal help, she says her premiums would jump to over $700 a month.
It would be more than my mortgage payment.
It's estimated that 3.8 million Americans won't be able to afford insurance without the tax credit, including 2 million by next year. And according to KFF Health News, the average premium would double by about 114%. Sabrina Cortlett is the director of the Center for Health Insurance Reform at Georgetown University.
When people lose health insurance, it can mean significant financial debt. It also means that people are waiting to the last minute to get necessary care, often ending up in our emergency rooms.
Cortlett also says insurance companies will likely raise prices on everyone to cover the costs for the uninsured.
The people affected will come from red states. They'll come from blue states. The folks who will be hit the hardest are in about 10 red states that have not expanded the Medicaid program.
Hunt says she's been trying to contact her congressman for help.
Why can't we just figure this out?
Thanks to CBS Evening News correspondent Lana Zak for that piece. CBS Sunday Morning recently ran a 17-minute piece called Why the Employed Are Pushed into Homelessness. And I hope you can take the time to really watch this piece. You can find it at KALW.org, click news and Your Call. Here is Ted Koppel interviewing Rhea, a mom of four who is raising her kids on her own after leaving a violent partner. They live in an extended stay hotel.
What does it take to keep your family going in a week?
Between my room, my car, and all the expenses, I'm pushing 12 a week.
1,200.
Mm-hmm.
How hard do you have to work to make $1,200?
I'm constantly driving from 2 in the morning, and sometimes I won't sit down until 8 o'clock at night.
Could you work any harder?
If I could, I would.
And if you couldn't hear that, Rhea says she sometimes works from 2 in the morning until 8 o'clock at night. Thanks to CBS Sunday Morning for that 17-minute piece. It's really a must-see. Why the Employed Are Pushed into Homelessness. Find it at KALW.org, click News and Your Call. Today we're going to talk about the resources available to those in need. How can people access the help they need? And really, what will it take to improve the situation of Rhea and the millions like her? Today, we're joined by Pete Manzo, president and CEO of United Way of California. They work in partnership with California's local United Way to implement community impact programs and advocate for policies that ensure every Californian has the resources and the opportunities they need to thrive. Pete was previously director of strategic initiatives for the Advancement Project. That's a civil rights action tank that advances equity and expands opportunities for low-income and vulnerable people. Hi, Pete. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Great to have you. Logan McDonald is Regional Vice President for Bay Area Community Services, a nonprofit providing behavioral health and housing services for individuals and families across the Bay Area. They have helped nearly 20,000 people address their housing and/or behavioral needs. Logan also oversees the homeless prevention program for Oakland and Contra Costa County, Keep People Housed, and serves as a board member for the 100 Black Men of the Bay Area. He's also vice chair of the board of directors for Glide Memorial in San Francisco. Hi, Logan. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Pete, let's start with you. The United Way has conducted a lot of research, and finding these clips, what is striking is none of this is new. Back in 2010, there were pieces about how about 70% of the population could not make ends meet or had a hard time paying basic bills. What is different about this affordability crisis?
Wow, that's a really tough question. It's been getting tighter, as you mentioned, since 2010. I think the rate of change in prices is one factor, right? I think housing, right? In that 10 or 15 years, we really haven't produced many units, so the cost of housing has continued to increase, and that's a real strain on people. You know, we've increased wages. So there's some bright spots in California. The minimum wage has gone up, which is good. We did some good things during the COVID pandemic in terms of keeping people in their apartments and sending cash assistance to folks. But I think the wind down of those programs and having to return to work, having to go back to commuting and so on and pay for childcare again has kind of left a bitter taste for a lot of people. Those are, I think, some factors that are different now than say, 10, 12 years ago in terms of how it feels.
Yeah. Logan, what would you add? What would you say is different this time?
Yeah, I mean, it's just snowballing, really. It's like we've seen these issues since the 90s. We've seen people get pushed out, marginalized populations get pushed out at an alarming rate since the 90s. And at this point, we're just seeing the same old song, right? Rising rents, stagnant wages. And I believe that the landscape just becomes increasingly predatory, right? I mean, I could kind of get into a whole rabbit hole about capitalism and how that impacts the working class, right? But the truth of the matter is we just don't have the protections in place. We don't have the resources in place. And it's very scarce. And the sad part is people are really struggling.
You know, please get into that, Logan, because at a time when half the country says they cannot make ends meet, and then 70% of middle-income Americans say that they're falling behind the cost of living, you now have in the United States over 900 billionaires, and their wealth has soared by 18% to almost $7 trillion this year, according to UBS Global Wealth Management. Fortune has a piece on this. So let's get into that, Logan, because as so many people say on this show, poverty really is a policy choice.
Totally. Well, you know, sadly, it is a zero-sum game, right? It's like these billionaires are taking their money, they're extracting from somewhere, right? And that's why you see homelessness increase in places like the Bay Area, in LA, in Hawaii, in New York, right? Because what's happening is these are all knowledge-based economies. So they're attracting all of these people from all around the world. They have these specific skill sets that drive up the economy, but they also drive up the rents. And what happens is the higher the spikes in rent go, right, the less people can afford them. And it's so simple, but just it's so clear that this is a problem that needs to be solved.
And Pete, something we talk about a lot when we do shows about this crisis is we look back at what happened under COVID. Because the government does have the power to really change policies. People who were barely getting by had a little more help with SNAP. They had a little more help with child tax credits. And I'll never forget reading articles about, there was a woman working at a gas station and she was finally able to buy her son new shoes and take him out to lunch. NPR had a piece about an older woman and they actually had a photo of her fingernails. Because of the increased food assistance, she was able to finally buy healthy food and she saw improvements in her fingernails. And yet we saw the positive effects of this, and then it was taken away. And so it just shows that government has such a role to play here if you're going to live in a country with people barely getting by because the wages are so low.
Yes. I mean, the silver lining on that is that, as you mentioned, there is a lot that we can do that we know would work. We just need the political will to do it, right? And so for a while there, we cut child poverty in half across the country by expanding the child tax credit. And then we couldn't renew it, right? And Congress couldn't get its act together to renew it. So that expansion expired and kids fell back under the poverty level, right? Poverty level also, by the way, is way too low, right? Mm-hmm. The federal poverty level is keyed on food, and it would need to be much, much higher than to reflect the true cost of living today. That's why we do the real cost measure, right? So you look at all the inputs that a family needs to meet. Housing is the biggest. If you have children and young children, childcare becomes very expensive, and it can be more than your housing costs, right? Food, transportation, healthcare. You've got to be able to access the internet because, you know, you can't bank, you can't apply for jobs, you can't follow your kids' progress in school unless you can do that. All of these things kind of add up to the cost of participating in modern social life, right? And we want everybody to be able to participate. You should be able to buy your kid an ice cream cone once in a while, or go to a movie, right? Just live. People want to be able to have that living space. And that's what we're trying to measure with the real cost measure. There are things that government can do, and I hope that we will do them, you know, soon, right? So childcare is very expensive. There are some very popular plans to provide subsidies for childcare so that no household spends more than 7% of their total revenue, total income, on childcare, which would be a big boost to the workforce. You'd see a lot more people going to work, and it would be good for everybody. That's one. We should be expanding access to health coverage, right? Congress, with a recent bill, went the other direction, right? They're trying to kick eligible people off of Medicaid, right? And to make it difficult for eligible people to access food assistance, which is, you know, really penny wise and pound foolish. If you think about it, a dollar of food assistance turns into like $1.55 in the local economy. That pays for grocers, it pays for everyone else, keeps the person fed, right? Enables them to pay their rent. That's why we would want to, you know, withdraw food assistance to low-income households. Really doesn't make any sense to me. Last thing I'd say about this, you know, I would agree in many ways with Logan. Around the 1980s, there was a sharp divergence between worker productivity in the U.S. and what workers got paid. And U.S. workers are among the most productive in the world. And the productivity has continued to grow, right? But wages have not kept pace. Most of that gain then has gone to the kind of winner-take-all culture that we have, where it's all about shareholder value. And then that's why you see so many billionaires, right? Right. And we could choose to spend differently in this country. And so I'll stop there.
You mentioned childcare, and I just wanted to let listeners know that New Mexico became the first state in the country to launch universal income-free childcare. Everyone has access to it, and we're going to do a show about this in January to find out how it works and how New Mexico did it. If you'd like to join us today, we are talking about this affordability crisis in the United States. It's been going on for a long time. But now when you look at the cost of everything, I mean, even if you're going to get, let's say, a chai with soy milk, sometimes it's $7 or $8. A lot of people can't even eat out anymore because I've seen burritos now for $16, which is pretty shocking. It's hard to eat out with a family of two, and I can't even imagine with four. It would cost at least about $100, depending on where you go. And I saw an interesting report about what's going on with restaurants. Because of the tariffs, everything is much higher. They're having to buy a lot more ingredients from overseas, and their profit margin is 5%. I mean, they're barely hanging on. So if you'd like to join us, what changes have you seen? If things have changed for you financially, if you or a loved one or someone you know is struggling to make ends meet, we'd love to hear your story. You can be anonymous if you'd like. And then we'd really like to share resources. So if there are resources in your community that you know about and you'd like to let others know about, please give us a call, because especially going into the holiday season, this is really rough. And we would just like people to know that they're not alone and to know that there is help out there. And if you are in need of help in California, you can call 211 to find resources. That's 211. And you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We're joined by Pete Manzo, President and CEO of United Way of California. Logan McDonald is Regional VP for Bay Area Community Services. Logan, what would you say about resources? Because this is such a hard time with the holidays, you know, especially people with children. You know, every kid, especially in this heavily consumer society, every child should have a gift. And so what would you say about resources? Where can people find help?
Totally. Well, first off, I'll just echo what you said about 211. That's the clearest thing, is the best thing to remember. Right. If you need to find something, call 211. But off the top of my head, I will say that there are a lot of toy drives going on right now. You know, I'm a member of Alpha Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. We actually have a toy drive coming up in a few days. Just check us out on Google and you'll find out where that is. And also, just in terms of financial assistance, right? If you're falling behind on your rent, go to keeppeoplehoused.org if you're in Oakland or Contra Costa, and or Solana or Sonoma. And what we'll do is we could potentially help you with some financial assistance to get you caught up with rent. And if you are unhoused and you need a place to go that's warm, please come to one of our wellness centers. We have one on in Oakland on 629 Oakland Avenue. We have one in Hayward, in Fremont, in Pleasanton, in Berkeley. So please, if you need a warm meal, speaking of warm meal, go to Glide. I'm on their board. But yeah, just please, make sure that you stay warm, stay out the cold. And also at our wellness centers, we also have a housing resource center embedded in it. And there, that's where you could get resources to actually connect you to what we call the continuum of care. So you could actually get connected to shelter, rapid rehousing programs, things of that nature. And again, the homelessness prevention piece, right? In right. San Francisco, they say for every one person housed, three people fall into homelessness. Wow. So that's where Keep People Housed comes in. We want to make sure we stop that inflow. We believe that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So make sure that you get the financial assistance. It's a lot harder to get out of homelessness once you're already in it. So please let us stop that for you.
And that website again is keeppeoplehoused.org. Is there a phone number for people who might not have computers?
Yes, totally. I would actually just say easily, just call 211 and they'll get you right connected to us.
Great. And I'm really glad, Logan, that you brought up Glide. Because so many working people are struggling, middle-income people are struggling, we also want to make sure and talk about unhoused people, our unhoused neighbors. What are some of the changes that you've seen at Glide this past year when it comes to need and what you're seeing on the streets?
Totally. Well, there's a lot more need for warm meals. We're seeing a lot of that. And I think that unfortunately, you know, with all of the shifts that we're seeing in federal government and statewide revenue, you know, I think we all are making the shifts to try and make this make sense for us. Right. So that means, you know, more private investment, more philanthropy. We're all constantly trying to raise money to fill the gaps and the deficits that we're seeing. So please donate to Glide, donate to Bay Area Community Services, because there's a lot of funding cuts and we want to make sure that we don't leave the people that need food the most or need resources the most. They should be supported and we should have safety nets in place.
Pete, what resources would you like to share?
Well, I would echo both you and Logan about 211. You can dial 211. It's a 3-digit dialing code. There is also a website, 211ca.org, where you can search for resources statewide. The best thing about 211 is if you need help from, you can access a live trained person. And so they can really help to meet all your needs if you're, if you know, I think that's the highest and best use of 211. And through 211, you'll get the full range of everything the community has to offer. So you can, if you're looking for food assistance, they know where all the food banks are and what their hours are and locations and eligibility for all kinds of programs, from housing to mental health to, so that would be the first and first place to call, to look into would be 211, definitely.
And if you have any questions or comments about resources, if you know of organizations that are helping people in need, we would love to hear from you. If you have a story to share, or you would just like to talk about the changes that you have seen over the past couple of years about how so many things are so high, groceries, restaurants, bills, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. Also, the energy bills. You can also email your call at kalw.org. So we talked about 211. And Pete, United Way has an initiative to help people pay their taxes for free through myfreetaxes.org. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes, please. Thank you. Thank you. One of the best ways to fight poverty is to connect people to cash credits. So the earned income tax credit and the child tax credit at the federal level, and the state earned income tax credit and the state young child tax credit. Households can really make a difference by accessing those credits. And so we offer free tax preparation services to connect people to those credits. You know, file your return and receive those credits, can be thousands of dollars, right? In some cases, it can go back 2 or 3 years on the federal side. So that can be life-changing amount of money for people. So people can find out where to get free tax assistance by going to myfreetaxes.org. We also have a website that we host a bunch of financial stability resources called mymoneypath.org, where we're trying to help people. For example, many people are eligible for CalFresh or SNAP and haven't applied, right? Don't have it. So we can do benefit screening there. We use a tool called Benefit Kitchen to connect people to benefits, right? And so help them apply for those, which I prefer to call income supports. We go back to the real cost measure. 97% of those households that struggle to make ends meet have a working adult in the household. Right. The problem isn't that people aren't working. The problem is that work doesn't pay enough, right? And so what we want to do is supplement people's income through access to tax credits, access to food assistance, and so on.
What do you think it will take to change the income requirements to get resources? Because let's say the bottom level is $25,000 and someone makes $26,000 or even $25,500, they're still really needing help, but they can't because of these outdated measurements. What do you think it would take to change that, Logan?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what we're doing now. I figure the best way to make change is to try your best to lead by example. So one thing that we intentionally did is when we looked at other prevention programs all around the country, usually they have a 30% average median income cap. And we actually raised it to 50%. And that's because we're taking into account so many different household needs, household makeups, and we actually have the opportunity to advocate for this in a lot of the scope of work kind of designing that we're doing, right? So when we talk to different municipalities or different funders, we tell them when we see the initial template, we always put a little comment in there like, hey, we should increase this, we should increase that. Here's a study that we did on it. And they're actually able to kind of like make the change that way. So I think that's one thing to do is just like, when you have control, when you're talking to your funders, you really need to advocate for this type of thing. Because ultimately, they'll trust these nonprofits as the experts. And we have to kind of lean into that and let them know this is what works, this is what we're seeing, this is what we're evaluating. And that's how change is ultimately, hopefully it happens, even at the most micro scales.
Logan McDonald is Regional Vice President for Bay Area Community Services. They provide behavioral health and housing services for individuals and families across the Bay Area. Logan also oversees Keep People Housed, and you can find more information about what they offer at keeppeoplehoused.org. You can go there to access the application for region-specific assistance. And if you're not online, you can also call 211. Logan McDonald also serves as board member for the 100 Black Men of the Bay Area and vice chair of the board of directors for Glide Memorial in San Francisco. Pete Manzo is president and CEO of United Way of California. They work in partnership with California's local United Ways to implement community impact programs and advocate for policies to ensure that people have the resources they need. Pete was previously director of strategic initiatives for the Advancement Project. They worked to expand opportunities for low-income and vulnerable people. Logan and Pete, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
Thank you. And coming up after a break, we'll continue talking about the affordability crisis by checking in with other nonprofits to find out more about resources. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow on an Authoritarian Playbook series, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists Kara Lenig and Aaron Davis will talk about their new book, Injustice, How Politics and Fear Vanquished America's Justice Department. They write that Trump has taken unprecedented action against the DOJ, and they also write about how Attorney General Merrick Garland enabled Trump's return to power by failing to hold him accountable for attempting to overturn the election. Now we are going to continue talking about the affordable crisis, what's happening in this country. We'll also talk about resources with our next guests. Leslie Baccio is CEO of Second Harvest of Silicon Valley. They serve 500,000 people every month. Leslie Baccio spent 19 years as the chief operating officer of the San Francisco Marin Food Bank. She's also active with Feeding America and serves on the board of the California Association of Food Banks. Hi, Leslie. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Great to have you. Dennis Osmer is CEO of San Francisco Peninsula Energy Services and Central Coast Energy Services. They provide energy payment assistance and free weatherization services to low-income households in many parts of Northern California. Dennis's experience helping those in need in this capacity goes back 26 years. He serves on the Community Advisory Council for the Central Coast Community Energy and Board of Bay Federal Credit Union. Hi, Dennis. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you.
Ann Im is Senior Director of Community Partnerships at the Silicon Valley Community Foundation. Last year, they awarded over 14,000 grants, totaling $1.5 billion to nonprofits in California and across the country. Hi, Ann. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. Great to have all of you. I want to ask you what we asked our last round of guests. This affordability crisis is not new. I was watching videos from 2010 about how about 70% of the population said they just couldn't pay all of their bills on time. Leslie, given what you see at Second Harvest, what you hear from your clients, what makes this affordability crisis different?
Well, I think it is just an even more extreme case of that affordability crisis. Just like you say, we always in this region, food insecurity has been higher than the national average due to the high cost of living. But I think number one, the pandemic really just exaggerated the income inequality we have in our community. So many low-wage workers, their wages haven't risen much since the pandemic, but the cost of living continues to rise, and especially the cost of groceries. And I think what many people don't realize is that in our community, so many people just have no financial cushion. You know, we regularly survey our clients, and 55% of people have less than $100 in savings. Wow. So anytime your rent goes up, anytime somebody's hours get cut back of their job, they just have no financial cushion and often find themselves in cases of extreme need.
Wow. To your point, Leslie, the Washington Post had a piece last month called Poverty Spikes in the Land of Tech Billionaires by Rias Thebault. And here's how he started the piece. It takes Tazo Stewart Riascos 28,000 steps per day to make ends meet in one of America's most unaffordable places. He begins clocking that number of paces before sunrise as he hustles from his apartment in Oakland to his retail job in San Francisco, then back to the East Bay for his night shift at Trader Joe's, where he's on his feet until 10 p.m. All that scrambling, and he barely gets by. So are you hearing this from your clients, Leslie, that people are working multiple jobs in many parts of the Bay Area, but it's just not enough to make ends meet?
Well, that is absolutely right. And so many people don't realize that for so many of our clients, you're exactly right. They are hustling. They are often working multiple jobs. They're having to get creative about their childcare, get creative about their housing. Maybe they've moved in with their parents or they've moved in with another family. They are doing everything they can to try to piece it together and still coming up short. Again, as we regularly survey our clients, you know, 70% of people today are more worried about paying their bills than they were a year ago. It's just getting harder and harder here.
And 2/3 of Tazo's monthly income goes to rent, because we know that in this area, rents are so incredibly high. And you also work in Silicon Valley. Based on what you're hearing from nonprofits in California and across the country, what would you say makes this affordability crisis different from what we've seen in the past?
Yeah, I just want to echo a little bit of what Leslie touched on. I think the cost of living has just skyrocketed. And when you have families that are trying to get just the very basic needs like milk or eggs, and you're seeing what that costs like in the supermarket, it's just getting harder and harder for families to be able to really thrive here in this region. And so I definitely think the increase in costs has impacted this region. I also think what's different right now is the housing, you know, the lack of affordable housing, and that has continued to make this region very difficult for people to continue to live in and thrive. So there's sort of a number of things I think that are kind of coming together. And also I would say that maybe in some respects, what people are experiencing, the impacts, the challenges are not as visible as what we saw during the pandemic when everyone was really feeling the stressors of what was going on. It feels a little bit less visible, but we know that this is what's happening. And that's what we are hearing from the nonprofit partners that we support and fund, that it's just getting much harder for residents, including their own staff members, to be able to live in this region.
And we should say, Anne, that in Silicon Valley, it's easy to assume that a lot of tech workers are making six figure salaries, but that's not always the case. And it's also important to point out that 70% of middle income people say their income is falling behind the cost of living. The Washington Post interviewed Marie Valdiava, who was laid off a couple years ago from her tech job. And she took shifts at a coffee shop and began volunteering at a food pantry. And she said, "I never thought I would be in this situation." She's 44. She says that based on the people that she talks to, half the neighborhood is laid off and in poverty. The other half is extremely wealthy and extremely privileged. So in a place like Silicon Valley, and where you have just obscene wealth, you also have so much poverty. And you have a lot of people working what are supposed to be, you know, decent paying jobs who are also struggling to make ends meet.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And we have seen in this region layoffs across many large corporations and in the tech sector. And I think what we're seeing is there are many families, even in middle incomes, who have needs, and that kind of pushes its way down, right? Because now we have more people who are looking for jobs that may have been in a higher income bracket that now don't have a job. And it just pushes its way down to those who are even lower income and makes it harder and harder for those who are in that lower income bracket to be able to live here. So we're definitely seeing that in our region. And it's I think, contributing to what the challenges that our communities face.
Ann Im is Senior Director of Community Partnerships at the Silicon Valley Community Foundation. Leslie Baccio is CEO of Second Harvest of Silicon Valley. They serve 500,000 people every month. Dennis Osmer is CEO of the San Francisco Peninsula Energy Services and Central Coast Energy Services. They provide energy payment assistance to low-income households in various parts of Northern California. And Dennis, according to a report by Climate Power, electric bills have increased 13% since Trump took office. So can you tell us a bit about what your clients are facing and what you think is different about this crisis compared to what we've seen in the past?
Our customers, the people that we serve are certainly seeing those kind of increases in all those situations that you've already talked about. And I think most obvious is the biggest problem we face right now is with the Trump administration. And that is the absolute lack of direction in any of the federal programs that we administer. So, you know, like they say, we're carrying our lives on our fingernails here. It's a mess. And the same kind of chaos actually is made worse by the state. So, you know, at every level of government, for those of us who are federally funded, who really want and need to provide these services, we're finding obstacles at every point. You know, I always thought it'd get better, but it has not. This has been just a banner year for moving backwards.
Dennis, because so much is going on, it's hard to keep up. Can you tell us more about that chaos that you're experiencing?
It started, I think, in February, soon after January 20th, is that people stopped communicating in the federal government. And that led to confusion and doubt, layoffs, severe layoffs in our organizations and other organizations like ours in the state. And we were in limbo until the end of the shutdown. And we don't have a huge piece. There isn't a huge piece of the budget set aside for helping people with their energy bills. So a lot of the news we got was very sparse. It simply wasn't addressed. And then as the shutdown ended, we found out that the LIHEAP program, Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program, was funded for the next year. But we don't know what's going to happen next year. We're going to have to go through the same thing. It's tough.
How are people paying their bills now that it is winter and it's cold out there?
I say they aren't. You know, we watch the shutoffs only in the PG&E territory, but this last month they were at an all-time high for the year. And it isn't like PG&E is completely ignorant of the situation. They have, through the REACH program, helped about 1,000 people with about $400,000 worth of payments, but it just isn't enough. It's just as always, it isn't enough, and the overhead of the chaos certainly doesn't do us any good.
Dennis Osmer is CEO of San Francisco Peninsula Energy Services and Central Coast Energy Services. They provide energy payment assistance services to low-income households across Northern California. Dennis, if people need assistance paying their heating bill, where should they go for help?
They can give a call to our 888 number, 888-728-3637, or they can go online and apply at calliheapapply.com, calliheapapply.com. So we'll send one to people who call, and people who are tech savvy can make the application out on the internet.
Thank you. And we have that, or we will put that on our website, kalw.org. Click news and your call. And again, that phone number, if you need assistance paying your heating and energy bills, 888-728-3637. That's the right number?
It is. Thank you.
Thank you. Leslie, what would you say to people who are struggling to make ends meet? What resources would you like to share?
Well, folks should definitely connect with their local food bank. So at Second Harvest of Silicon Valley, we are part, we're kind of the supplier behind the charitable food system in the two counties we serve. And if you go to our website, shfb.org, you can find out either through our food locator tool, where you can enter your zip code and find out a food distribution site near you. We also have a food connection hotline. You can find the number there, and you can get connected with someone who can both screen and help you get connected with CalFresh, what is also known as SNAP, formerly known as food stamps, or get connected with one of our food distribution sites. And I think that's what a lot of people don't realize, is that your local food bank is usually the kind of the center of this charitable food system. Again, at Second Harvest of Silicon Valley, we have more than 400 nonprofit partners and more than 1,000 sites across the two counties we serve.
Thank you for that. And what about you, Anne? What resources would you like to share?
Well, I maybe want to flip it a little bit and talk about how people can support, because, as you know, as a community foundation for this region, we are supporting nonprofit organizations like Second Harvest of Silicon Valley to be able to do this great work. And one of the things that we've been asked from many people in the community who want to help, but they're not sure how to, is they've asked us, okay, well, what can I do? And so one of the things that we did was we launched a Community Lifeline Fund in October to directly respond to many of the policy changes that we're seeing at the federal level that are impacting people's access to basic needs like food, healthcare, and housing. And so we've launched this fund so that anyone can contribute. It could be large or small, so that they can help our region and the residents that are really challenged. And we're proud to partner with organizations like Second Harvest and Valley Health Foundation and others that are doing really important work in this region. So I just wanted to make sure that I could share that piece of information, because we want to make sure that, sort of in a time where people may feel like, I'm not sure how I can get involved or help, that there are places where they can help their neighbors.
And given that, Anne, because there are so many people with a lot of money in your region, are you finding that more people are stepping up given what we are seeing from the Trump administration?
We are definitely seeing donors who are stepping up and who have reached out to us to ask where they can give or how they can help. And we have definitely seen folks who have contributed to this Community Lifeline Fund that we've launched. What I will say is that we want to see even more people get involved, because the situation is very urgent. And like I mentioned earlier, it's not as visible, I think, as we know it is to be true in terms of the challenges that people are facing. And so we really hope that more people can get involved and contribute and fund the great nonprofit organizations that are responding to the community's needs.
And to your point, it's so important to point this out. This I should say this area, the Bay Area, would not function without immigrants. I just think that's really important to point out also, because we often say, you know, half of Americans can't afford food, but there's a lot of undocumented people who are our neighbors doing really, really difficult work. They are also struggling to make ends meet, and they're living in fear right now. And when you look at, when you really drill down and look at the income, according to this Washington Post piece, more than a million Bay Area residents live in poverty. We're talking about $28,000 or less per year for one adult. A million people making $28,000 or less per year, and about 800 others are near the line. So, Leslie, it's just important to point out that when you go into some stores, these are the people that are doing the service work, the really hard work, the people who are taking care of loved ones, people washing cars, people cleaning houses. I mean, they're just barely getting by.
That is absolutely right. And I really appreciate Anne also pointing out that this is a real hidden issue. You don't realize that throughout your day, you're probably interacting with folks who are really struggling to be able to make it here day to day. And also, food insecurity here, we're already back up to close to the levels we were at the height of the pandemic, but it is just more hidden. And now with these cuts to SNAP and also cuts to Medicaid, that is going to really mean that our lines get longer. And I don't think people understand just how fragile the safety net already is. But with the cuts that we have coming down the road, it will mean a real erosion of this safety net. And we really appreciate the call to get involved, to make a commitment to your local nonprofits and to your local food banks. At Second Harvest, you know, 90% of our funding comes from the private sector, the majority from individuals. So that support is really important. But also, these government programs are critical, and we are facing a real, the most significant cuts we've seen to those in the lifetime of these programs.
Well, that was the other question I was going to ask. Dennis, you talked about the chaos and the uncertainty. As someone who works as CEO of an organization that provides energy payment assistance to low-income households, how are you all planning for the next 3 years?
There's always been a little element of uncertainty because we have federal money, and we don't take donations because we depend on partner nonprofits, and we don't compete against them for private funds. But it's really just by the skin of our teeth. We have to assume the worst and plan for it and hope that it gets better than what we've projected. But, you know, we're still in business so far. But, you know, you can see all over the place that nonprofits that help out with the people of greater need are going down the tube. And it's frightening.
Well, again, if you are in need of energy assistance, you can go to the website LIHEAP.org, LIHEAP.org. You can also call 888-728-3637. And if you need general help, you can call 211. And your final thoughts on how you all are thinking about the next 3 years?
Well, we're going to do our best. And I think this is a time where community just needs to come together. We can do this. I think we've got the resources here in our valley to be able to support our neighbors. And so for us, we will be steadfast and persistent in our work so that we can get resources to the community. And we know that we can do this, but we just have to come together and do it as a community. So I remain hopeful. The work that Dennis and Leslie are doing always gives me inspiration. And there are many, many other nonprofits that are doing incredible work in the community. So we will keep doing this work, and we will keep at it.
Leslie, your final thoughts and how you're all planning for the next 3 years.
Yes, well, at Second Harvest, we are committed to being a constant in our local community. We are committed to doing all we can to meet this immediate need for food assistance, while we're also going to remain focused on advocating for the kind of long-term changes we need to ensure all of our neighbors have access to nutritious food. Just like Ann said, this is a solvable problem. We have the resources in this community to address the food insecurity we have, but it is going to take everybody's help to make that possible. So really encourage folks to focus on how you can help locally.
Leslie Baccio is CEO of Second Harvest of Silicon Valley. They serve 500,000 people every month. Dennis Osmer is CEO of San Francisco Peninsula and Central Coast Energy Services. They provide energy payment assistance to low-income households in many parts of the Bay Area and Northern California, including Monterey, Santa Cruz, Marin County. You can call 888-728-3637 or find the link at kalw.org, click news and your call. Ann M is Senior Director of Community Partnerships at Silicon Valley Community Foundation. Ann, Dennis, and Leslie, thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And we heard from a listener who said, please make sure all of the phone numbers and the information are on the web post. We will definitely make sure. You can find that at kalw.org, click news and your call. And again, if you are in California, you can call 211 for resources. Thanks to Nina Kissinger for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.